The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back. Second hour is here. More guests to come. And John Talty, an hour from now, the judgment guru, Ken Smithmeyer, in the final hour, judging the coaching hires. And more of your calls right now at 855-242-7285. Brian Harsin was here on Monday. We had a great conversation with the new Auburn coach. He's making a few waves today in the state of Alabama with a comment that we are going to share with you about geography. Dennis Dodd tweeting, when evaluating his job, Auburn coach Brian Harsin considers, quote unquote, the team up north and says, why not us? That's an old line that often happened in the Ohio State Michigan game. Dan Mullen used to talk about that with Mississippi and Mississippi State. Cecil Hurt responds with some latitudes and longitudes, and that's not a Jimmy Buffett song. Tuscaloosa is 33.209 8 degrees north, and Auburn is 32.6099 degrees north. So yes, from a practical point of view, get in your car at Auburn, start driving north, and call me when you get here. More than likely, if you go directly north from Auburn, I'm trying to remember my Alabama geography, you'll end up, I think, in Fort Payne, Alabama. That is close to the Tennessee border. For those who don't know, Tuscaloosa is in West Alabama. Auburn is in East Alabama. Maybe they looked at things differently in Boise. Anyway, let's get to the calls at 855-242-7285. And Terry is up next in Georgia. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Paul. Great interview with Seth Emerson earlier. But I wanted to comment about your interview with Mike Griffith on Friday. You really peppered him with some questions, and you had him a little confused a little bit. He was just trying to give you stock answers. I mean, we don't have the answers about why Georgia hasn't gotten it done. But one thing that we haven't talked about is they've had players leave early to try to get drafted, and maybe it wasn't a good idea that they would try to – they didn't even get drafted, and it really hurt us over the years. So I had a question. Do all teams get insurance policies for their seniors, or only a few schools?
I don't think everyone gets one, no. I think they're very selective. And you're right. And by the way, I want to make things clear. I mean, there are some guests on the show that I may have a good time with. I like Mike Griffith. I mean, there are other guests here that I may be – I mean, you can always tell whether I like a guest or not. And I really like Mike. We had some fun the other day, and we do that all the time. That's why Mike is such an entertaining and enjoyable guest. Thanks for the call. Do appreciate it. Let's check in with John, who is in West Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Hey, John.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
John, we are doing great. Thank you for calling.
I'm a long-time listener and first-time caller, and I think it's kind of appropriate. I don't know how many folks know this, but 76 years ago tomorrow, the Marines landed on the shores of Iwo Jima.
Wow.
And my dad was one of those Marines, and it happened to be on his 23rd birthday. So I just wanted to get.
Well, John, let me offer this, and I'm going to let you jump in. But for young people who don't understand the importance of that moment, the picture is one of the most iconic pictures in American history of the Marines planting the flag there. It's one of the most pivotal moments in world history. And tell us more about what you and I know soldiers don't talk very often, but what did you learn from your dad about his experience?
Well, and as you can imagine, I could get emotional talking about it. I learned a lot, and one of the things I did want to get out, Paul, before you know we were out of time or whatnot, is my dad was a sophomore All-American at the University of Alabama in 1942, and he actually got sworn into the Marine Corps during a halftime ceremony at the last home game. The Marines let him play in the Orange Bowl against Boston College, and then the next morning he flew from Miami to Camp Lejeune and joined the bomb disposal unit, where there's a story behind that, because it was listed as ordnance, and he didn't know what ordnance was. when it was time to sign up, he didn't want to wait in the lines that the other tables where you were signing up. So he told his buddy, he said, well, there's no line in the ordnance line. So let's just go and get out of here and sign up. So needless to say, ordnance was not at all what he thought it might be. And he actually led a unit of Marines on Iwo Jima. And their job was basically to get rid of all the unexploded bombs that, you know, we had dropped, and also to defuse some of those in the landmines, obviously, that the Japanese had planted there. You know, what was one of the great things about the unit, Paul, was that he actually had a 15-year-old and two 16-year-olds under his command. And because back then everybody wanted to serve.
Right.
So my dad was 23, so he kind of felt like he was the big brother of the group, even though he, as he would tell you, you know, he was nervous every night, obviously. But Iwo Jima was pivotal, back to your initial question, because we had a lot of planes that were crippled coming back out of, you know, Japan. And so we needed this island because there was a nice landing strip there. And so we needed the island, you know, to kind of take care of the planes and refuel and things of that nature. So that's why it was pivotal. And the funny thing about the flag raising that many people don't understand is that was, I think it was the third day of 30 some odd day battle. And the battle was far from being won at that point in time, but my daddy was actually in his bunker near the airstrip. And he said, you could literally, when they rose that flag the second time, it stayed up there. He said the whole island, there was a soft cheer, you know, from all the Marines, because they all saw it. And he said, even though we knew that this battle was far from being won, he said, seeing that flag, and I do get emotional. He said, seeing that flag told us all that we were going to win this war. We were going to win this battle, and we were going to win this war. And so, you know, the flag and the picture of it, you know, gets a lot of publicity. But Daddy said for the Marines that were there, when they saw that flag go up on top of Mount Suribachi, he said, we just knew that however long it took, we were going to win this battle, and we were going to win this war.
John, that is an extraordinary story. I can't tell you. I mean, it means a lot to me personally, not only as an American, but my dad was in the Philippines at the same time. And just to think about,
oh wow,
being, you know, I believe my geography, I mean, Iwo Jima, it was between the Philippines and Tokyo, wasn't
yes.
it? That is incredible. I don't know if I've ever heard that story told better than you just did.
Well, I appreciate that, and thank your dad, you know, obviously for his service. And, you know, the Philippines, the battle was there prior to Iwo Jima, and it was brutal. And you know, Daddy came back, and he played for Alabama again in 1946, and then he played in, I think, 47 and 48 a little bit for the New York Giants. But Daddy would tell you, he would say, you know, I used to think war was or he said, you know, I used to think football was tough. He said, you know, I learned after Iwo Jima that football is a game. War is hell on earth. And Daddy would never use profanity. I mean, and he would apologize for saying it that way. He said, but there was, he would tell you, he would say there is no other description that can adequately describe, you know, what those men went through. And so I was just thinking about it today at the chance that, you know, there's a member of our greatest generation or possibly a Marine, you know, from World War II or at Iwo Jima or whatever. If they're listening, we certainly appreciate everything they went for. And you know, without them, quite frankly, we may not be speaking American right now. It was it was a very pivotal time, you know, and so we had to win that battle and we had to win that war.
John, thank you so much. I'll never forget this conversation. We appreciate it greatly.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Wow. That's an incredible conversation there. And I thank John for sharing it. We will take a break. More to come on this Thursday afternoon. Pete Thamel will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome back on a Thursday afternoon. A number of topics we want to talk to with Pete Thamel, including the upcoming college basketball tournament. But let's, as we say hello to Pete, first start with Gus Malzahn. Like all of us, Pete opined this week on the Malzahn from Auburn to unemployed to UCF conversation. Pete, great to have you on. Thank you. And Gus Malzahn told us yesterday he thought about going into television for a year, but thought, you know what, maybe a coaching gig would be better. How are you?
The fortune cookie summation of it is Gus Malzahn can be Gary Patterson at TCU or Kyle Whittingham at Utah. How about that?
Very well. I'm glad. By the way, you mentioned the defection from Harbaughville. I know it's an old subject, but and I know this offseason has maybe been a little bit better for Jim Harbaugh than the regular season. But what are your thoughts on what he has coming back and is he ever going to turn this corner?
Well, at this point, a quarterback staying at Michigan would be more of a surprise than a quarterback leaving Michigan, because I think essentially every quarterback that he's recruited from high school has transferred. Now, there's still two in the program, obviously, but for the most part, I don't know if any of them have actually been seen through in his 6 years there. And I think a lot of it comes to identity, and these are not like – these are very dissimilar quarterbacks, and I think part of it is it's – not having a vision and not recruiting to the vision causes mismatched parts. And that's a lot of how to diagnose Michigan's problems on offense. And look, if you had told me when he got hired 6-7 years ago that quarterback recruitment identification among his biggest issues, that would be very surprising. And here we are. And it is there have been other issues, but that is number one on the list. And I give Michigan administrators credit. They took a look at the staff, where it was, and they said, you know what? Basically, we're going to hire a young, energetic staff that's going to go get our talent base better, because the talent base in the program right now, as we saw last year, wasn't very good. And essentially, they cut Harbaugh's salary and they cut his buyout. And if it doesn't work, they're going to have a little better players in the program. And if it does work, they can push forward in the future.
Chatting with Pete Thamel. Pete, I do want to get to basketball, but I couldn't help but think, as I mentioned Jim Harbaugh to you, we have not had your thoughts on Urban Meyer yet, and he's already stepped in it. He stepped out of it now with his quick exit of the strength and conditioning coach from Iowa. But what are your thoughts? As it looks like he's going to get Trevor Lawrence, there's some speculation that, maybe that could change. But how do you think he will adapt to life in the NFL?
It's going to be really intriguing, Paul, because it is going to be an adaption. And I think that if you have Trevor Lawrence, you're sitting with, like, pocket kings at the table, right? You've got a better chance to win. My theory on the NFL has always been, basically, there's like 8 quarterbacks, and then everybody else is like somewhere between 7 and 9 and 9 and 7 trying to find that quarterback. And if you look at the playoffs every year, it's those same thumper quarterbacks who, you know, the Breezes, the Rodgers, and the Bradys, obviously, who tend to advance. Mahomes is obviously the latest iteration of that. And so I think with that quarterback, he has a chance. But there will be growing pains. There are going to be challenges. And I really think to distill his challenge in one thing, it's going to be how Urban manages to handle losing, which is something he did not do well at any point in his career. And he is going to lose, and he's going to lose a lot, and he's going to lose more than he's won for at least a season or two, and that's never happened before. So I really think his ability to evolve and adapt and endure through that is going to be the key to him being successful there. He's a very smart guy. He has evolved and adapted throughout his career. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch. Certainly, the most interest that I think any of us and most of your listeners have probably ever had in the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right? It's a fascinating football experiment. I'm looking forward to see how it unfolds.
Pete Thamel with Yahoo, whose latest involves the look ahead to the NCAA basketball tournament, with a look at some of the disastrous stories of this season, including Blue Bloods in trouble. Pete, fascinating piece. And I think a lot of us are scratching our head trying to figure out how the best names in college basketball could be so off this year. What's the explanation?
Yeah, well, it's never one thing, right? When you look at holistic trends, but I do think that the way one assistant coach put it to me yesterday was interesting. He was like, "Look, there's only a handful of guys every year who are true incoming freshmen who can really change the paradigm of your program. And maybe some years there's 12 of them, and maybe some years there's only 4 or 5. And this year, and from now on, there's going to be." His joke was a third of them went to Duke, a third of them went to Kentucky, and a third of them went elsewhere. Well, now some of those thirds going to Kentucky and Duke are going to go to the G League, and some of the elsewhere are going to go to the G League. And then you have Cade Cunningham, obviously, going to Oklahoma State after they hired his brother. They have 2 of the top 5 on the G League Ignite team. And so some of the rhythms that have become normal the past decade don't feel the same. The younger teams relying on young players haven't had time to develop from the pandemic, which is a factor, right? Like, John Calipari's teams have notoriously started slow and then gotten better, and, you know, they're beating up on the metaphorical Moorhead States of the world, and you know, they tend to kind of hit a stride in January. Well, a lot of these teams with young players just haven't grown up because of lack of practice time, lack of exhibition games, fewer preseason games, and they haven't had that opportunity to grow and develop, or as much opportunity to grow and develop. And then, I mean, some of it, especially when you look at Kentucky, there were just misses. They're mismatched parts. The team was put together poorly. Leadership's an issue because these guys don't really know each other. And that's just not at Kentucky. It's at other places. You know, clearly Jalen Johnson leaving Duke, that was not all simpatico there, right? That wasn't going perfectly when he decided to go. He had some injury issues. There were some issues with how his role was being played. So, I mean, COVID makes everything complicated, and I think it's almost an appreciation to these programs that have managed to land the plane with all these young players over the years. It hasn't happened, and it's backfired.
So much criticism of Calipari, but I want to ask you about the two of the bluest blue bloods of all, and that's Duke and North Carolina. I mean, Roy Williams had a disastrous season last year, which was overshadowed by the pandemic and the shutdown, and really not a lot of people remembered it. This season is only slightly better. And then there's 74-year-old Mike Krzyzewski, who's very easily the best coach since John Wooden. And suddenly he looks vulnerable. You mentioned some of his players a minute ago, but what's up on Tobacco Road?
No, it's really interesting. Somebody pointed out that Krzyzewski's 5 years older than Nick Saban, so I think your audience is probably going to appreciate that more than that, more than anything else I say today. The Duke thing is interesting. There's a kid named Jonathan Kuminga who's on the G League Ignite team who could end up being the number one player picked in this draft. There's no stand on the table Zion type who's definitively going number one. Now, Kuminga was not committed to Duke, but there was a thought he could go there. So is he the guy that, like, changes their paradigm? Could he have been, like, an R.J. Barrett or somebody like that who's come in and been a top-five pick and really been just a huge part of who they are and in what they do? And look, Mike Krzyzewski, there was a pivot 4 or 5 years ago where essentially he said, like, you know, we're in the one-and-done business. You know, it wasn't a declaration, but if you look at the actions, you think back to, you know, the Zion Barrett team. There was another lottery pick in that group, and they've kind of hit that churn. And now, you know, do you step back and say, does that change? And for Roy Williams, I mean, they were awful last year, and they're on the bubble this year. They're not nearly as bad. Some of it is coming down to they play an antiquated style, Paul. They play with two bigs, and they have very good bigs. Daron Sharper comes off the bench for them, is projected as a first-round pick, and Armando Baker. They have four legitimate, highly recruited bigs, but the way they play doesn't really fit modern basketball. I thought it was interesting that they don't defend the three very well, and it makes sense, right, because everybody else is playing small ball and running around, and they're still plodding around a little bit. And so, you know, does Roy Williams have to step back and evolve? Does he have to evolve his coaching staff? Look, they have young guards. Caleb Love was going to be fine, but he hasn't been able to come in and take over right away. So, yeah, I mean, Roy Williams is not in trouble. I want to be very clear about that. But the last time Carolina had back-to-back seasons where they missed the NCAA tournament was Matt Doherty. Era and Matt Doherty's era ended at that point. Now Sean May got hurt that year, and you know if you really want to go back and dive into the particulars, but it is certainly a time to pause and reflect. And with two seasons like that in a row, it's hard to just say we're not going to change the ball, I would think, from the outside. But Roy Williams, dadgummit, change doesn't come easily to him either. So I think it's really fascinating. And look, these guys. You can throw Boeheim in this mix, and certainly Patino's back at Iona now. Like, there's that generation of coaches that have really, for, you know, decades, kind of loomed over the sport, kind of loomed over the sort of Eastern Seaboard, ACC, SEC, Big East. You know, that generation is going to cycle out sooner than later. And so, you know, it's obviously a matter of when, and these guys are trying to hang on. But there's some fascinating decisions that you would think have to be made sooner than later in college basketball in that quarter.
No doubt. Always great to have Pete Dammel on from Yahoo. Some fascinating subjects. Pete, thank you very much for being patient with us, and we will visit very soon, I hope.
Paul, thank you.
You got it. The great Pete Dammel, nobody better in breaking things down, and just a stunningly great writer. We will take a break. More to come on this program. John Talty in the third hour. We'll get his take on Malzahn, Brian Harsin, Tennessee, and who knows what else. We hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Michael is up next as we continue here on a Thursday afternoon. Hey, Michael.
Hello, Mr. Feinbaum.
Hey there.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Glad to have you on.
Listen, let me preface this by just saying I'm just a businessman here, and being a businessman, we look at things through the numbers. And speaking of these coaching things there, I just wanted to see if you could help me understand maybe some reasoning. Now, I'm not casting any stones or anything. I want to make clear of that because I don't want to hurt my friends in Tennessee's feelings. But If I'm not terribly mistaken, didn't Tennessee have to pay a buyout for Coach Heupel? Is that right?
Yes, in terms of in the parlance of buyouts, I don't think it was in the Gus Malzahn range, but it was a couple million dollars.
Right. I think it was something like 2.3 million.
Right.
And then didn't Tennessee didn't they say they were paying him like 4 million plus?
Correct.
Right, something like that. And then I just thought, and again being a simple businessman, I'm looking at now UCF's deal with Coach Malzahn. And it looks like they're paying him about $2.3 million. So I guess if we break it down, this first year for Tennessee to have Coach Heupel, it's going to cost them what, maybe $6.6 million, something like that.
Well, Michael, let me add to your accounting bill here. They also had to pay Philip Fulmer off. And I think they had a small buyout for Danny White. And here's the one that is still up in the air. Jeremy Pruitt had about a $12 million buyout. And I would be willing to bet that they'll end up settling with Jeremy Pruitt as well.
I bet you're right. And here's the other thing that I'm just thinking now. And again, simple businessman here. Coach Malzahn, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I certainly don't. And the reason I'm calling you is because I think a lot of times maybe you do know. And so I was just curious. I mean, if I'm Tennessee and I really do think that there's been these improprieties that we're alleging happened in letting Coach Pruitt go, and so I'm out here looking for another coach. One of them that I would have talked to probably in the very early on, and myself personally, would have been Coach Malzahn, because let's face it, I tell you one thing, like him, love him, or whatever, he'd almost guarantee you a winning season. And if you really are looking at those kind of things, NCAA, if you could have gotten him for 2.3, and you're paying a guy for something that's really kind of an unknown, at least as far as coming to the SEC and stuff, I'm looking at the deal that UCF got, not only for Coach Malzahn, but also for the Arkansas State AD. And I'm thinking, now there's some business people, okay? I look up in Tennessee and I look to myself and I said, how in the world are these guys still operating?
And Michael, if you measure the buzz factor from the Malzahn hire and compare and contrast it with Josh Heupel, it's significantly different. Heupel is an unknown, and I'm not suggesting, because I have no earthly idea whether he'll be successful or not. I try not to be a fanboy here when a new coach is hired. Malzahn, you know he will be successful, and they are making money off of him today.
Right. And I'm the same as you. I mean, hey, Coach Heupel may go up there and knock him dead. He might be fantastic. More power to him. That'd be great. But me, as looking at the numbers, I'm thinking, okay, I'm doing. This is what I'm paying for really kind of another unknown. After all the unknowns they've bought over the last many years, another unknown. This is what they're investing in. And I just thought to myself, man, you guys are crazy. The minute Auburn fired Malzahn, I don't even have a dog in the hunt. I'm an Alabama fan, but I've got a tremendous amount of respect for Coach Malzahn, and more power to him. I think he'll do great down there, and God bless him and his family. But if I'm Tennessee, hey, that'd been the first call I made the minute they fired him.
Michael, thank you very much. I don't know what business you're in, but I like your business acumen. We'll take a break. More to come here in the next couple of hours. We will talk to John Talty in the next hour about that subject that we just got through discussing. More of your calls after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
We welcome you back. One more postscript to our last caller about the buyouts. A friend of mine did the math. And apparently Tennessee also had to pay $2.5 million to get Danny White. And they paid a couple more million to get Josh Heupel. So the total price tag is $4.8 million that Tennessee had to pay to one school, UCF, to get their athletic director and their head coach. I would say Tennessee is very likely paying Malzahn's first 2 years. Let's continue with the calls. Catherine is in Florida. Hey, Catherine, you're on the air.
So happy to talk to you twice in 2 weeks. I like that caller that just called about the hiring of Gus Malzahn. I like the positive comments that he made. I think it's going to be really exciting to watch him develop that program, and I hope that he'll follow through with, you know, supporting the players and developing their skills and also mentoring them. It's been a good program there, and, you know, I hope that he will follow through and not just have taken the job because it was an opening. But the thing about Tennessee and the cost, sometimes I had wondered, too, how much it cost. I said, it seemed like maybe they were competing with the national debt because it seems awfully high. But this week I really enjoyed the show. I've never seen so many people calling in from Florida. And your relationship with Mike Bianchi is rather entertaining, is all I can say. You made the Sentinel today.
So oh, really?
I don't know if you read his.
No, I do not. I have not.
Well, it's pretty good. We like him. And, you know, we're really excited here in Florida, or in Central Florida especially. And I think it's going to draw maybe some SEC fans to go out and support UCF also because of the coach. But anyway, thanks a lot, Paul. You do a great job.
Catherine, thank you. And I think some people misunderstand. You know, I frankly thought the Malzahn hire was out of sight. And I do think the program will be very successful. And whatever's happened in the past, I'm done with. I'm not going to ever say another word about it. It's just not worth it. I am really excited by Malzahn, and I agree with him. I think he will get that program within striking distance of a Final Four berth. We are back to the calls right now, and Sean is up next. Hey, Sean. Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Hey there.
Hey, I got a question about, do you think they hired Heupel as a clean image, or do you think that, because as far as the best coach goes, we all know that the best play caller and who could get us to the point faster, and you know who I'm talking about, but he's got kind of that Sankey hanging over his head, is Hugh Freeze.
Oh, there's no question Hugh Freeze would have been the most exciting.
Do you think that was a stain?
Sean, remember, you have to, I mean, you know, because you're a fan, but the circumstances required Danny White to bring in somebody who was pristine and beyond approach.
That's right.
Reproach. And I mean, I'm not saying that is a short list, but you know, you always have to put yourself in the shoes of the person making the decision. And yeah, he's aware of Gus Malzahn. He knows exactly who's available and who's not. But he also knows, because he has 3 years experience, that Josh Heupel is not going to bring any disrepute to his program. And that's very critical. He knows what he's capable of. He trusts him. Wow. He knows wow. He's hireable in about 10 minutes, because he all he had to do is send a text to Heupel and say, I need to talk to you.
That's right. But as far as play calling and getting that fast pace back to the top, I think Freeze would have been the guy, but he's just got that cloud hanging over his head.
Well, Freeze has two problems.
Do you see him back in the SEC, Paul?
Not right now. And I think Hugh Freeze, I mean, I thought maybe when the season began, but there was a lot of resistance to him. And it really has to do with the NCAA issues. I don't want to be cavalier and say that people have
in November 30th or some odd 2020, he was violations ended as far as I know. Is that correct?
That is correct. But in a league that has a couple of issues like the Tennessee right now, there's just not an appetite for a guy that, even though he didn't directly, but he was in charge of a program that got slammed, and that's the situation with Ole Miss. Anyway, we are at the end of this segment. Let me tell everybody that because of all the bad weather, there's been a lot of rescheduling of games, and we are going to hand it over to a women's basketball game right now. We will continue for the final 2 hours on radio, and we hope you'll stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.